Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respects to the elders past and present, and the Aboriginal elders of other communities who may be listening today.
Welcome to The Gays Are Revolting, a dissection of social and cultural issues relevant to gay men.
We put the G in LGBTQIA+, and we're here for the last time to help you be the best G you can be.
And help us keep the conversation going and stay connected to us and the show by joining our group on Facebook, please.
And welcome to the final episode of The Gays Revolting. How are you, my gorgeous boy?
I've never been happier.
I was about to say I've had a couple of cries today, but yeah, sure, fuck you, Luke.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it doesn't feel like the last one. Like, it's such a weird feeling.
It's not the last one forever, but yeah.
No, the last one for now. Yeah, it definitely feels very strange. I was getting very emotional earlier and lashing out a little bit at everyone in the house. Aww. And I was like, oh no,
it's fine. I'm sure they deserve it.
It could be to do with the fact that we are in the middle of a global pandemic.
Well, yeah, that too.
Don't need too much.
It just feels like, with so much going on in the world personally, I'm more positive. I'm a, believe it or not, a glass half full type of person.
That's surprising.
I've got 100 episodes that prove you're not.
Well, the glass is full of blood and semen.
Oh, okay. All right.
But tonight we're actually joined for the first time ever since we've started. I have been begging for us to talk about one of my favorite topics, which is sport, baby. We're joined by Eric Dennison, a queer academic looking at homophobia in sport. Mikey and I did this interview and I thought it was super fun. It was a little sexy.
A little bit.
It was a bit sexy. Ooh. It was a bit it was very informative. And it was about a world that I think personally the four of us aren't too deeply ingrained in.
Although I recently have gotten into
I saw Tom's story today.
Yeah, I've recently, my boyfriend and I got sick of watching everything on Netflix and Stan and that sort of stuff. So we started watching the football, which I've never been into at all.
Like, do you know the rules, or are you just watching, like, the guys wrestle each other to the ground?
No, so he's British and he likes soccer. So he was like, oh, can we watch football? So I was like, yeah, sure. So me and him and his British housemate started watching it, and they asked me to explain the rules. And I was like, I honestly have no idea what's going on here. So we had to like stop watching it and watch a YouTube tutorial on how AFL works.
Stay tuned for the interview. You're going to love it. It's all about football.
Yeah.
Ice hockey. Do you know they play hockey on ice?
Ice hockey.
Oh, I thought you meant just ice.
Ice hockey looks like full on smashing up against the screens and stuff. It's kind of hot. After this last recording, we're going to be jumping onto a live stream for our patrons for the last time. But the live stream is always a lot of fun. So I was going to say join us then, but this is going to be airing on Saturday. So it will have passed.
And also after our interview, we will be saying a few final words for our last episode. So stick around for that as well.
Before we all drink the Kool-Aid.
We're going to tell each other how we really feel about each other.
Yeah.
But before all of that, there's something I'm kind of excited to talk about. We've covered American politics. Well, we've covered the politics of the world quite a lot over the last few years, and it's generally been a bit of doom and gloom. So I'm kind of excited to have something political to talk about, which is actually giving me a bit of hope for the future of the world, especially when we're talking about the American political landscape. And that's Kamala Harris. Have we all been following Joe Biden's announcement and everything that's happened since then?
But mostly through TikTok. That's how I find out all my news.
Really?
It was a trend on TikTok
news.
People react things.
Yeah. Oh, this is how I know I'm so out of touch. Like, I'm becoming an old gay, is because there's like entire social media things that I just haven't. I thought that TikTok was just like kids dancing, but
it's so much more.
And that somehow taught you about Kamala Harris. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So Joe Biden, who is of course running against Donald Trump for the American election in about 70 days, has announced his running mate, his vice president, hopeful, and it's Kamala Harris. It's very exciting. She's
I believe, very pro-LGBTI.
Yes.
And yeah. she is a bit of a breath of fresh air, I think, at least. What do you guys think?
I'm all about it, honestly. I think she is fantastic. I'm really, really excited to see how this next election goes. Mm. Yeah, she's super, super pro-LGBTQIA+. I mean, she's had her, like, little iffy moments here and there when it comes to trans rights, but she's definitely sort of like picked up on that, worked it out and been like, actually, I was wrong about this. Let's change these things. There's a few things about sex work as well that she's not very supportive of, but I think as any human or any decent human, she's going to learn and grow and come around. She's definitely someone that'll come around.
I think it's so exciting because like she, absolutely this breath of fresh air and she's like this younger kind of force and she's like really go-getter and she's like good at like debating people and she's like this nice young person next to the crypt keeper of Joe Biden.
and let's be honest as well, there's some stuff from Joe Biden's past that wasn't entirely on our side, but I think we need to be a bit realistic about this stuff and we need to acknowledge that unless you're electing someone that's in their 20s, whatever politics, you know, were 40 years ago, they're probably have evolved since then. And the worst things they've found in her closet, you talked about her relations with trans people. What it was that she was involved in the blocking of a medical affirming care, so hormone treatment for a trans woman that was being held in a men's prison in 2015. But she has since explained that the legal brief, although it was produced by her office, it was not seen by her and all that sort of thing. So it's not that her opinions were that trans people in prison shouldn't be receiving that medication. And she has since come out and said that very clearly. She believes that all inmates should be receiving the medication they need. But she also impressively said, although she didn't cite that paper before it went out and all that sort of stuff, she still takes full responsibility of it because it was coming from her office, which I really think
Yeah, like she said, the buck stops with me. Like, so she's taking full responsibility. And I think that takes a lot.
And the sex worker stuff was interesting as well. It was actually about backing a bill that shut down websites like Craigslist, classifiers and stuff, which in the states is often used by sex workers to sort of vet potential clients and that sort of thing, and it helps to keep them safe. The reason she was shutting it down was actually because of the sex trafficking that was happening on the website. And she's again since said, look, we probably should have broken that down a bit more and looked how we could stop one avenue of that those websites and not the other avenue of those websites, and is also in support of legalizing sex work, which is like so progressive for an American potential VP to be saying. I find her so exciting, you know, her CV sort of speaks for itself as well. You know, she outlawed panic defense.
I feel like she fiercely defends LGBTQ community. She doesn't like just tolerate it. Like she's like
she's been
going
quite
for it.
She was pro-gay marriage years before. Oh, and just to mention also the panic defenses here, when we talk in Australia, when we talk about panic defense, it's quite often we're talking about it in the context of gay cis men. And that's a very important thing. But she was also talking about panic defense being used against trans people as well, which is very important. Also wants to roll back Trump's transgender military ban.
Thank God. There's a lot of fucking Trumps.
It's a meaningful choice for the visibility of a person of color is well overdue. You know, that phrase, a breath of fresh air, keeps coming around a lot, but I think the statement we should be saying is something like about time, you know, and just saying rather than like, oh, this is new and different and I'm excited. We should be saying about time, like thank fucking God.
Totally.
You know, I just hope that it does pave a way for a newer standard, and it's all about normalizing. I'm sure, you know, I don't follow a lot of the right wing political news sources, but I have seen quite a few people on Fox News, for example, purposefully choose not to pronounce her name properly and sling as much mud as possible. But it's a step towards normalization in that we should be seeing people of many different genders and colors running for positions of power in all levels of state and government and in our workplaces. So for me, I really look at it as about time and something that seemed like a logical decision for where the social conscious is at or has been at for quite a while now. So, but you think about American politics and it just sort of gives you the heebie-jeebies at the moment as well. It's not like a nice world to be giving mind space to it.
Which is why it's such a breath of fresh air to see both Biden and Kamala talking about America in a really uniting way. Like, yes, they are pro-gun control, but the way they talk about it isn't in a condescending kind of dividing kind of way. They're not saying, oh, if you love guns, you're a fucking idiot. They're saying, we need to unite on this topic. We need to work out what works and what doesn't work. We get that some people like guns, but we need to also take some steps to make this sort of stuff better. I find it so exciting that America is, that prominent people in American politics are having uniting conversations.
You fuck with the NRA and
but both of them have a track record of fucking with the NRA.
Yeah.
And usually that would block you from getting to the level that they've gotten to as potential president and vice president, but how exciting that it hasn't stopped them from getting to this level, and let's hope that they do fuck a bit with the air.
And like the fact that she immediately made her chief of staff an out lesbian,
yes,
was a former Obama White House staffer. So I think her name's Karine Jean-Pierre. But yeah, she's an out lesbian. So I'm like, how progressive is that? That's awesome.
Yeah, fantastic. Also the first black woman, I believe, to potentially be chief of staff as well.
Awesome.
Mm. Also talking about something utterly terrifying other than American politics is what the fuck are teenagers doing nowadays? I'm so scared of teenagers. I tell you what, whenever I see teenagers on public transport, I'm like, holy shit, they're going to beat the shit out of me.
But
like we mentioned before, they are huge users of the social media app TikTok, which is generally used for learning dances and posting captions over the top of them, sometimes political in nature. But they are also sort of the source of a lot of the latest trends that the youth of today are tapping into. One that was popping up on my feed quite a lot in the past few weeks, they're calling the femboy trend, which started off as Femboy Friday, with a particular user posting it. It's a really interesting view of, I think, how the younger people are viewing these gender norms.
It's so great. And it's like, it's so nice seeing such a young community embracing so much of it as well.
But that's the thing with this femboy movement is that it's not necessarily just queer individuals. So it's actually opening itself up for people that don't identify as queer, particularly male identifying teens, to experiment with things like makeup, traditionally classified feminine clothing, so dresses, tank tops, things like that, even though they don't identify sexually as queer or as, you know, part of the LGBTIQA community. It's just as young people expressing themselves in a very genuine way. That said, however, I have seen the flip side where a few people, and it's probably people of my generation who don't like when young people do anything nice, starting to hold up the magnifying glass and going, how legitimate is this? Is there a level of appropriation here? Or are we just seeing femboys expressing themselves in a genuine fashion? Have you watched any of these TikToks?
I haven't seen it on TikTok. As I said, I don't use TikTok, but I have read a couple of articles about it, and you know, people share TikToks on the very old-fashioned medium of Facebook, which I've seen. I kind of get where, you know, people, as you said, that might be of our generation or older, feel like that it's sort of been a bit appropriated and stuff. But I feel like, I mean, from what I've read about the guys that are doing it on TikTok, you know, these amazing young people that are very pro-queer, even if they aren't part of the queer scene. And to me, in my mind, that essentially makes you queer anyway. If you're an ally, you're part of our family. So I kind of get why some people might have their back up a bit about it. But as long as these kids aren't, you know, putting on a dress and then the next day calling people faggots, I don't have an issue with it at all. One thing I've learned a lot about over the last couple of years of doing this podcast is, you know, we were sort of born being told you're boys and that sort of thing. But I'm so excited that there is a generation growing up going, hey, yeah, I can put on a dress and paint my nails and whatever, and it doesn't really matter. Because I do think that's hopefully where we're going. I think it is where we're going, that boys won't be told they have to play football and girls won't be told they have to wear dresses, and that there will be icons for these kids to look up to where someone that they physically look like might be wearing stuff that the other people they don't physically look like wear that they can associate with.
As long as they don't grow up to be Jeffree Star, then...
Oh God, that is a mess of a human being.
Imagine. No.
Maybe there is hope for the world after all. If there's a person with power in leadership for America and boys redefining their like masculinity and like, oh God, like come on, there's hope.
Well, the reminder here is that I don't know if we ever did discuss it on the show, but you'll remember there was that TikTok trend where those two high school boys were posting their like romantic...
Yeah, like doing it for clout on TikTok.
Journey. And it was absolutely for clout. So there was no sort of allyship there. There was there was actually no intent. Yeah. And that's part of the motivating factor towards some people looking at this and going, I want to see some receipts.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, for me, I screenshot their looks and go, I wonder if that outfit's on ASOS and let me add it to my little wish list sort of thing.
Me.
So I don't sit on either side. It's just for like putting the information out there. That's why some people are looking at this movement and going, oh, we've been burnt by this before.
Totally. Yeah.
We lifted some of these young people really up on a platform within our community to find out they were doing it for clout and no other reason.
Totally.
But from the examples I've seen, it's just a lot of really fierce outfits and people expressing themselves. So far.
That's it. Like, I honestly wish that there were more guys around when I was their age who was doing this because, like, I was already very feminine as, like, a teenager. I was wearing makeup and, like, wearing nail polish and stuff. And, like, I got hounded all the time. And to think that, like, there are these cis straight boys out there doing this, making any other queer kid feel comfortable in their space makes me, like, it really, really touches my heart. And I honestly hope that these boys are doing it for the right reason. And as you said, Luke, I hope they're not just doing it for clout. I think some of them are genuinely doing this.
Mm.
I just said that twice.
I believe that they are because people.
Times. Yeah.
I choose to believe that they are because people do.
Yeah.
Children do this in real life. I remember like going to my grandma's house and she would get out all of her old frocks.
Yeah.
And we would put them on and stuff. But the difference was then she would make sure that I was out of them before my dad got there to pick me up because we had to keep it secret. We had to keep it quiet. To me, this is those kids, and Mikey, you and I have talked about this before, you sort of played around a lot with clothes and expression through breaking stereotypes, even as a child, where you don't even realize that that's what you're doing. You're just having fun. No. So I have to believe that these kids are actually just doing what we used to do secretly at our grandma's house or in mum's closet or whatever, but doing it to a mainstream audience and then hopefully reaching out to other young kids.
They're doing it in a very high fashion way, by the way. Like,
oh yeah.
Oh yeah, they would have looked much better than me in my grandma's wedding dress.
Like, don't you guys feel like the original guy to do this was like Jaden Smith? Like, I don't know. He like loves Instagram, there was all those photos of him going to his formal with that girl from the Hunger Games, and like he had like the long like skirt and like rocking it.
Have it's you guys nice. Seen the other hashtags or trends that have come out of it? Where so obviously Femboy Friday is the hashtag, but now they're doing Femboy Hooters.
Oh yes,
Goth IHOP and Tomboy Outback, and I'm just like, can these places actually exist, please? Because like, I think these would be incredible. If I could go to a Femboy Hooters, I would be in heaven.
Like, well, that would be your version of heaven. Is a Hooters restaurant.
TikTok's so great. No wonder fucking Trump wants to shut it down.
That's your good place? Could you imagine if that was the good place? Oh, welcome to Hooters.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Eric Dennison is leading a range of studies at the Monash University School of Social Sciences and joins us today to discuss homophobia in sport. He's conducted nearly 20 studies in 42 different sports on the impact of homophobic language on children and says the link between homophobic language and the high rates of suicide and self-harm among LGBT youth is clear. Eric, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you for your interest in this.
We're going to talk about sport finally.
Really, finally? This is your top of your list, was it?
Yeah.
The very last episode. maybe we should talk about sport.
And finally, we get to talk about sport because I think it is a really important part of our growing culture. So thank you so much for joining us and sharing some of your passion with us today.
Thanks for your interest in it.
Oh, you know, we do what we can. So you've released some recent studies looking specifically at community sport and clubs, and the findings do show that the LGBTI plus community still experiences a range of social barriers to participating in sport. For me, it was just being terribly uncoordinated and not being very good at it in the first place. But What are some of the barriers that our community faces when looking to join these community clubs?
I think you're spot on there around this. Like, I'm not very coordinated and I'm not good at it. And I think a lot of gay kids and LGBT kids kind of self-exclude because for straight kids, they don't have this, and cisgender, they don't have this sort of extra layer of worry. And, you know, I was one of those kids who actually really liked playing sport when I was young. At first, you know, my parents were pushing me into it and I hated it. But then you get to really enjoy it as you get a bit older. But then I started figuring out, oh, wait, I'm finding my my teammates a bit attractive. There's something different about me. What's going on here? I'm not supposed to feel that way. And that's when I started really hearing the homophobic language that's being used and the jokes about gay people. And every time someone drops a ball, you're a fag or you're a puff or whatever. And that cut really deep for me as a kid. And I think a lot of us think that things have changed in sport. And sadly, they haven't. And that's the research that's coming out, is that it's like the 1970s. The sport has remained this little vortex of language that, you know, is still seen as acceptable and normal. But nowhere else in society can you, you know, repeatedly call someone a fag.
It's like the Sam Newmans of the world. They say things in the public media and you're just like, what the fuck is, you know, I think within that bubble of sports, it's a different vernacular or a different level, but.
And we didn't really know the impact of that until recently. And you know, credit to like the Obama administration in particular, but also researchers in Canada, because they recently started including measures of sexuality and gender identity in these massive studies. I don't know if you remember when you were back in school and you had to fill out the sort of surveys by the government around like health. Well, before they didn't ask about sexuality. And in Australia, it's really, you know, it's really depressing. They still don't ask about sexuality. But the American government, for their, you know, credit to them, they started asking about sexuality, and the alarm bells, particularly around public health researchers, just started ringing in the last 5 years, because this data is coming out that gay kids are playing sport at half the rate of straight kids, that their risk of self-harm is much higher. And you know, before it was kind of more advocacy research that would find this. This is coming from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which is kind of like, you know, the big daddy of public health agencies. And so that's where the research that we're doing at Monash, and even Monash being interested in this topic, previously it's sort of been more smaller universities. But at Monash, they realize, oh, this is a major public health crisis, that these kids are being the target of homophobic abuse in school, in sport environments and school sport environments. And there is deterring them from playing sport. And we know now the other really big piece of research that's come out is that if you're exposed to homophobic language and sports, the prime site for that to occur, you're much more likely to self-harm and attempt suicide. And so we really need to knock this language on its head in sport and figure out solutions to stop it, not only because we want kids to get the benefits of playing sport, but also we don't want them to be harmed, particularly in places like PE class, and, you know, where they have to play sport, where they have no choice.
It makes so much sense to me. I think my dad used to force me to play football, like community football, and I think I made it 2 or 3 games before he gave up and was like, oh, I think this kid's quote unquote artistic. But it was the first time growing up that I sort of started thinking of the idea of what passing means. It's like there's no room to be any different. You have to pass as you know, the football player, otherwise you're ripped to shreds. And
what's interesting is my sense is that a lot of gay guys don't want to think about sport. And that's maybe why we kind of celebrate. We're like, oh yeah, we've got gay marriage and, you know, things are great. We have workplace inclusion and, you know, that kind of thing. And yet we have these horribly toxic and dangerous sport environments for our young people that we're not really doing anything about. And it's actually, you know, in our own research, it's almost all straight people driving the research because they're so alarmed by the impacts. And I guess to us, it's just sort of, oh yeah, sport's horrible. It's kind of like,
oh, yucky.
Yeah. Even for me, deciding to do this research as a gay man, it was really challenging because just reading the comments on the surveys that we do, and, you know, it's quite cuts deep to see the proportion of kids who still agree with statements like gay men are disgusting. And, you know it's religious and you can kind of compartmentalize it and think, okay, right, and it's sport and that kind of thing. But, it does cut pretty deep. And I think, you know, one of the challenges I think we as a community will probably need to do is start looking at environments like schools, which haven't changed that much, and sport, and start saying, okay, wait, we've won a lot of rights, but we need to start protecting our young people and putting all the effort we've put into gay marriage, we need to start putting into saving the lives of our young people now that there's really good data coming out that, you know, the rates of self-harm and suicide are so alarming.
Now, you've also found that individuals at nearly sort of half of the Australian sporting clubs involved in the studies still believe that homosexuality is wrong and unnatural. Was that finding surprising to you at all?
Well, research has found that for some reason, we're not exactly sure why, boys who play sport are more likely to be homophobic than the general society. And we think that's probably because sport is, if you're going to play sport, you're more inclined to be sort of, we call it social dominance oriented. So you believe in social dominance and hierarchy and structure. And so therefore, you know, there's weak people and strong people. So maybe that's why, who knows? But what is really fascinating, and this has shocked us all, including me, because when I started this research, I thought that the reason why boys were using this language is because they are homophobic. And we found that that's not the case. So boys who are homophobic are just as likely as boys who have lots of close gay friends to regularly use homophobic slurs or make derogatory jokes about gay people in sport environments, which seems totally counterintuitive. So why would you be using this language that seemingly, if you have close gay friends, you would know is harmful to them? Yeah. And so we've done a lot of research trying to look under the hood to figure out why this is. And it all seems to come down to this perception that there are no gay people in this environment because, you know, playing sport is a straight person thing. And then they also, no one's actually told them to stop in sport, unlike maybe at home, because they're not using this language at home. So that's why we know it's a sport specific thing. But it all comes down to kind of mimicking each other. It's like these social norms that are unique in sport where, you know, the young boys come into the sport environment. This language is being used by older boys, particularly ones they respect, and they just kind of pick it up. And it's just the thing they do. The problem with that is, yeah, they're using it in sport and it's really harmful to gay kids and LGBT kids generally, because trans kids are often the target of this language. But then they're carrying this language into adulthood and it's helping shape their perceptions of gay people. So if every time a ball's dropped and they hear a sexist slur or a homophobic slur, that shaping their perceptions for life about males who are gay or women about being weak or undesirable. So that's why we really need to step up this language, not just because we need to help, you know, our young people, but it could actually help prevent these sort of deep-seated biases that form that are really hard to change that we all encounter in the workplace, you know? Oh, you're the gay guy, you're the creative one, you can, you can organize the company party because, you know, it just comes naturally to you kind of thing.
Yeah, and it does perpetuate itself too, like you said. So they grow up with these slurs in their mind and then they perpetuate them onto the next group coming into the community sport. It's sort of like you have to break the chain somewhere with this.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there, exactly. And that's how we actually describe it at academic conferences, is it's this bizarre self-perpetuating thing that's going on where no one has actually ever gone into sport and said, hey, stop using this language. So of course it's not going to stop because it's, you know, it used to be a really homophobic environment, like everywhere in society, but it's the sort of last, you know, bastion of homophobia or at least homophobic behavior that everyone, no one wants to touch. You know, the gays don't want anything to do with it. Yeah. You know, I think the most important thing is that the public health agencies have really started to cotton on to this. And they're like, hold on, if we're going to reduce these rates of suicide and self-harm in young people, we need to start addressing the problems in sport and clean up sport. But also with women, I think increasing the number of women playing sport has really helped because there is a slightly disproportionately high rate of lesbian women, particularly as adult participants, but it's not that much. It's not as high as everyone perceives it to be. It's only like 2% higher than the population, not 80% higher. That's helped because it's starting to raise awareness that there's this bizarre culture that no one's really challenged in sport that's going on that we really need to do something about.
In female sport, like, how bad is homophobia? Like, is it a present thing and is it like a predominant thing?
You know what's really fascinating, and this also really annoys me when I go to panels and stuff when we're talking about homophobia in sport, and it is a lesbian on there. And for lesbians, you know, they are stigmatized, but it actually impacts, or it seems to impact straight girls or girls who are in the closet more than anyone than openly lesbians, because for them, they avoid sport. We just finished a study in rugby where we found, it was a large study in the UK, and we found around 96% of girls, so basically every girl, thought that people perceived that they were a lesbian because they played rugby
union.
But only about 15% of them were actually lesbians on these teams. And so there's this perception gap, and a lot of the women said, I actually was avoiding playing rugby because I didn't want people to think I was a lesbian, or I don't want to come out as lesbian because I don't want to stigmatize my sport. For gay boys, what they do is they avoid the sport because it's seen as sort of a heterosexual play. So it's kind of opposite land for women. But, you know, people who say there's no problem in sport, I think they need to broaden their horizon around, well, this stigma of, you know, women who challenge the norms by playing, you know, sports like rugby or cricket, well, they must be lesbian because they're just weird. That's the issue that we need to really fix, because that sort of is the underpinnings of sexism and all the rest of the problems we have in society.
That was definitely like a big part of roller derby as well. Like, I played roller derby probably about 8 or 9 years ago now, but it was the same thing. There was probably maybe a handful of like queer women that played the sport, but everyone else was straight. But it was very much perceived that everyone that plays roller derby is a lesbian, and that's it. And like, it's just not that at all. And it makes me sad that women are shying away from sport because they don't want to be perceived that way.
That's crazy.
I argue actually that sport is the key to dealing with homophobia and sexism, is that because he's, you know, 65% of boys play sport up until about 16, 17. So this is a prime place of social learning outside of their family environment for them. So then they're learning these things for the rest of their lives. So the fact that no one's really made any effort to clean up sport, it baffles me, because I think that's almost the key to solving a lot of our social issues. It's really hard to change a 40-year-old guy's mind running a bank or whatever he's doing, and the bias. And we know that now. I mean, there's been so many studies around how hard it is to change that bias in adults. So we need to start earlier, and we need to stop boys from getting this programming that there's something wrong with, you know, a woman who wants to play sport, or there must not be gay boys here because they don't play sport. We're still finding that stereotype, but we're not finding the overt homophobia, which is interesting, because again, guys who are not homophobic are using this homophobic language, but it's sort of this subtle sort of stereotype kind of language that's going on, that it's almost like they're automatrons using this language without any thought. And so that's really where we're focused now, is we know the problem, and now it's around solutions. Like, what are going to be effective ways to change this language in particular? Because it's not really a homophobia problem. It's a homophobic language problem.
Yeah.
And not seeing the impacts that it has further down the line, sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. I've always said being gay is a sport. Do you agree with that statement?
Of course it is.
Being gay is a sport, and I'm losing it. Something that I've seen more and more of in the past few years, which has been really positive, is seeing a lot of pride cups in different sports and sort of pride events as well, which have been the most tempted I've been to partake in the sporting community, because there's drinks involved in that. Now, part of the research you've done has actually evaluated various Pride Cup programs to understand the negative experiences that LGBTI plus athletes have in these clubs. Do you find that having events and Pride Cups make a difference in terms of the mental health and the well-being of these LGBT athletes?
And I'm guessing people at home might be groaning right now, thinking, oh yeah, these Pride games are just, you know, pink washing or rainbow washing. And I was one of those. Like, I thought, oh yeah, sure, the AFL is holding these things to sell merchandise. And the NHL has been doing it. They're probably the league that they pioneered it, like in 2013. And I thought, oh, they're just doing it to sell, you know, tickets. So I was as shocked as anyone when we found they actually have a big impact on homophobic language. So we've done two separate studies. One looked at these community level pride cups, which Jason Ball pioneered. Mm. We did a randomized study. So we randomly selected clubs that have held them and clubs that haven't. We compared them. So it wasn't as rigorous as it could be. It wasn't a full trial, but it was pretty well-designed research. And what we found is clubs that have held pride cups, the language, homophobic language, was used at half the rate of clubs that have not held these things. So wow. It definitely helps to reduce the homophobic language. They also had a better culture overall. Sexist language was less. What was interesting is there weren't more openly gay athletes or LGBT athletes, which was a bit. We think it's probably too soon. It's only been a few years.
Yeah.
And then we did another study looking at the professional level with all the semi-professional ice hockey teams in Australia. And same thing, we found the language use was around half compared to clubs. So clubs that have held pride games, they used half the language of clubs that have not held these things. And so we're on to something there. And we think it's probably this whole thing that you were talking about earlier around this self-perpetuation, putting rainbows up everywhere, talking about gay people, inviting someone to speak, you know, at the start of it, that kind of thing. It helps to break this cycle of language use, yeah. But it hasn't stopped. And that's because we think the language used around the messaging is often around, you know, inclusion, diversity. Still no one's saying stop using homophobic language, like really yeah. plain language. We know you don't think it's homophobic. We know you don't mean to be homophobic, but you don't realize the impact. So that's where we need to go next. And I think if we do that, we'll probably increase the effect. The other thing we're looking at, it's kind of peer champions, essentially, just activating people on the teams, like the captains and vice captains, to say, you know, your job is basically to make sure this language stops. And what's interesting is most of them don't even like this language, but they think everyone else likes it. Yeah. It's this bizarre disconnect of perception and reality. You know, they also think that their team would be welcoming to a gay person when in reality, of course, it wouldn't be. So we think it would be relatively easy. And we've done some initial trials activating kind of captains to say, you don't have to do much. Just give them a look. Just tell them like this kind of language isn't used here.
Yeah.
Now we're looking to run some trials with that in Canada, the UK, and Australia. You know, we have the clubs willing to do it and we have universities wanting to do it. Unfortunately, with COVID, finding funding to do research right now is quite a challenge, and particularly on things like LGBT, because it's kind of viewed as not as important, even though we have all this data on harm and that kind of thing. So that's frustrating. We're so close to finding some good solutions. You know, if we can combine Pride Cups with better education plus activating champions, we think if we did that in a relatively short time, we might be able to really stop this language that we know is so harmful to our young people.
So we're all familiar with RuPaul's hit song Champion, which is a
where have we gone? From sport to RuPaul, we had to get her in there somewhere. But...
Well, I mean, Eric, I take this ride where I want it to go, baby. but speaking of champions within the sporting community at large, we have people like David Pocock, who is quite the snack, SNACC, who were out there being pro-LGBT. What sort of impacts have you seen with a prominent public figure like that speaking out against homophobia or in support of?
And I've met him and he is quite the snack. He's a lovely human being as well. He's amazing. But he's amazing not only because he's a wonderful Adonis, but he was... We think, we're not sure, but he was actually the first professional athlete of any sort of, you know, merit to publicly support gay marriage. Amazing. And he refused to marry his girlfriend until there was gay marriage. And what's interesting, he's a devout Christian. So we have coined a term called the Pocock effect, because during the same-sex marriage plebiscite vote, that horrid thing we all had to go through, we did this piece of research looking at, like, because if you read the Rupert Murdoch press, the support from the major sports for same-sex marriage was causing this major backlash among fans, and, you know, they were losing memberships and et cetera, et cetera. So we wanted to test that. So we did a national survey, and we found the opposite was happening, that actually sports fans were the most supportive of same-sex marriage in terms of their sports supporting it. They weren't necessarily yes voters, but they thought it was a good idea for their sports to do this because it would help them become relevant with young people. but rugby fans were the most supportive out of all of them. Wow. And we think that's because it's become so normal to support gay people in that sport. And David Pocock was the reason for that. So he kind of gave everyone permission to say, well, I may not agree with this, you know, quote unquote lifestyle. Maybe I'm going to vote no, but I'm okay with my sport supporting this community. Yeah. And he's had a remarkable effect, we think, in terms of the language in the sport. And in a study we just were just in the middle of, we found that gay athletes who play with the Sydney Convicts, which is my old rugby team, they report a lot less homophobic language being used during games. And they think that was because David Pocock very publicly called out language being used. Mm. So we think he's had an amazing, and that's what we're hoping to replicate on sort of the club level, like the community level. If we can, you know, we know that there's David Pocock like characters at clubs. We just kind of need to give them permission to say, hey, your job is to stop this language and try and create a more welcoming culture for everyone.
Mm, the Pocock effect. Was Ashton Kutcher in that one? Was that? But it does have, that's really important, yeah. I think, fact to share is like these loud, prominent voices really do have a ripple effect on the greater community. Mm. We also saw Rugby Australia settle on litigation with Israel Folau. Did you see that outcome as helpful in propelling the anti-homophobia in sport movement? Even just, I'm fascinated to hear the effects of that, because it felt like it was getting crazier and crazier each week.
Yeah, and I think people might not like my answer. I know I got a bit of hate mail after I spoke out of the meeting around the positive. It was a positive decision because I think people need to think about three things. So if Rugby Australia had won, the government was going to change the law anyway. So the win would have been pointless. It would have been a win for nothing. And they were just going, you know, bankrupt themselves, even though they already are bankrupt because of it. The second piece was that it was causing so much harm to our young people. So all of this vitriol and hatred that was going on that pretty much stopped the minute they settled, it all stopped. And we need to really, there's increasing number of studies coming out saying that just the debate around same-sex marriage or equal rights or bathroom rights or whatever is really harmful to our young people, which I think we really need to start thinking about. How is this impacting our young people? Mm. And they also sent a really strong message. I think people see this as kind of a bolt for the blue, but rugby has been involved in this issue primarily due to the leadership of the Sydney Convicts in Sydney, but all the gay and inclusive rugby teams throughout Australia, probably, I mean, well before the AFL, since about 2009, the Wallabies were the first team to appear in a national anti-homophobia in sport campaign, and the only professional athletes to do so. So they've have this sort of long tradition that no one knows about. And so the Israel Folau thing wasn't particularly surprising. And in fact, what it did is it sent a message to everyone in the sport. These are the new standards. These are the new norms. And that's kind of what we need to happen at each individual sporting club now, if you will.
Yeah, that was a roller coaster ride, what happened. But I was impressed with how quickly Rugby Australia was sort of responding. And it felt like historically something like that could have popped up in the media and be pushed aside very quickly or been a like, we're not going to acknowledge this, you know, because we don't want to open the Pandora's box of having these difficult conversations.
And the media, I mean, to what you just alluded to, the media used to ignore this issue. So the fact they even cared about it, and, you know, they probably went over the top, like it was clearly getting clicks. You know, my friend works at news.com.au and he said, you know, they would, it was always one of the highest click things, I think. But
yeah, I could imagine,
you know, the fact even the public's interest in this topic is a big change. So I think the next piece is, right, you're interested in this, well, let's try and fix it. I don't actually think it's going to be that hard to do, but then the benefits are quite far reaching that if you can solve the issues in sport, you have a potential to solve sort of these issues of bias as people become adults.
Mm. Despite all the progresses in various areas, especially in the AFL with things like the Pride Cup, and I know they've put a lot of attention towards the mental health and well-being of their players, because I Google search gay football quite often.
Probably for different reasons than me.
Yeah. But I still get what I want out of it. there are currently zero out AFL players. Do you think this is a matter of time sort of thing, or do you think there's something more ingrained in that reason?
You know what is fascinating? We've thought so much, and I personally have thought so much about it, because you've had gay, you know, soccer players, multiple ones, gay, even American football, which is like the most brutal of sports. You've had, you know, multiple rugby players, and but yet you have AFL. You've never had a gay player, or retired or current. Bizarrely, same with the National Hockey League, which has also been a pioneer on this issue. So I've recently started to look at that with players from both sports to try and figure out why this is and what the parallel is, because there is obviously some kind of parallel. And our working theory is that conformity is really strong in both of those sports. Mm-hmm. You know, it seems to be maybe around not wanting to stick your neck out. You don't want to be seen as a tall poppy, or you just want to go along with what the team's doing. Whereas in sports, maybe like rugby or even American football or soccer, there's a bit more individualism about them. It's sort of, you know, particularly rugby, you know, and soccer, it's very much about stars and individuals and
Ronaldo.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's a famous soccer player. It may or may not be have a secret boyfriend.
Saucy.
Who knows? But I think that is a bizarre thing, AFL, mm-hmm. because they have done a lot, and we know that there are gay players in the AFL. They're just not coming out. There's a period where a few of them are going to come out together, and that never really eventuated. And you can understand why, because the consequences are quite severe. And we just finished another study looking at what happens when kids come out in sport, because there's this often idea that, oh, they'll just come out and she'll be all right. Well, that's not the case. That actually, when boys in particular come out to their teammates in sport, they're much more likely to be the target of homophobic abuse. So why would anyone come out in sport? Because the language is rife in the AFL. We've done heaps of studies. It's like 75% of AFL players have heard their teammates use words like fag and poof in the past 2 weeks. And around half of them have used this language themselves. And, you know, so that's them self-reporting this. So it's obviously even higher. I would expect it to be 100% have heard their teammates use this language. You know, about a quarter of them say their coach have used this language in the past 2 weeks. So this language is rife in, particularly in sports like AFL and ice hockey and rugby. And it's probably that, you know, hyper-masculine kind of culture.
Mm-hmm. Like, addressing issues like this in sport obviously has implications on kids, as you mentioned earlier, especially with like sport being such a huge part of school environments and like everybody having to do PE classes as well. You experienced homophobic bullying and had to move schools as a teenager growing up in Vancouver. How did that experience lead you to the work that you do now?
Yeah, and PE class, I mean, I think we can all agree it's horrible.
Yeah, absolutely.
Way to bring up that out of nowhere.
Oh, God, I know. Bring up that trauma. Like,
what the heck?
What's the phone number for your clinic again?
We'll head afterwards, Eric. I'm sorry.
Getting picked last, and, you know, the changing room and all. And that's the thing. And fascinating, that hasn't changed either. So we're working with a large charity in America that's studied this thing since 2009. PE class is always the sport environment that kids are most likely to avoid LGBT kids, and the PE teacher is the least trusted teacher of all teachers at schools. So that hasn't changed either. And you know, the problem with that is there's research showing that PE class is good for teaching kids lifelong skills, for introducing them to physical activity and giving them the confidence to throw a ball and those kinds of things. So kids missing out on that, they lose those benefits. But then they also, the trauma of the changing facility. Like in my case, my PE teacher said, oh, sorry, I can't keep you safe. Just don't come anymore. I'm like, but it's like,
what?
It's the start of the year. What am I supposed to do for the rest of the year for an hour, like three times a week? It's like, oh, I don't know, do whatever you want. I'll just pass you. You know, you should be happy. So what did I do? I went out and hung out with the smokers and took off smoking. So literally it directly impacted my health by him making that decision. So
that's what happened to me too, Eric. I started smoking around this time as well because I was skipping PE.
Yeah. And I was like, well, I mean, who's not in class right now? Well, the smokers and the druggos and the partiers and stuff. So I went and hung out with them, and that actually introduced me to going to raves and parties and stuff. So it all stems back to this decision by this PE teacher not to actually deal with the safety issue that, and, you know, keeping me safe. And it led me down a path that could have turned out really negative. Thankfully, it didn't.
Yeah.
Education and knowledge being passed to the PE teachers is really important too. So they're aware, hey, I'm not doing a favor for this kid by saying fuck off and do what you like. And, you know, that the level of support there is actually needed to keep them engaged in physical education, and potentially we might even like doing sports if we had a safer environment to play in there.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I've taught PE teachers on this topic, and I get the sense that a lot of it's sort of the too hard basket. They're like, oh, well, you know, I don't know how to deal with it. And they're actually worried that they're going to be assumed to be gay if they defend the gay kids or the trans kids or whatever. So they're actually worried about being bullied by the kids, which is so bizarre. Yeah. But then you think about it, most of them are like athletes, and it's all about sport and conformity. And so then it's you're
scary.
Like, oh, yeah, it's bizarre. But, you know, it's not actually in the curriculum, LGBT inclusion in most PE teacher training. So that's something that we need to adjust as well. But I think it's probably, you know, that's one factor, but it's, you know, it's also this community sporting club thing that's going on as well.
Well, Eric, I just want to say a big thank you for joining us for our last episode this evening. It has been really, really great chatting with you. Is there anywhere that our listeners can sort of help continue your research that you're doing?
Yeah, like I mentioned, we're looking to test out this champion thing and Pride Cups and better education across three countries, because we only really have data from Australia now. There's universities in University of British Columbia and Warwick in the UK and Monash as well. We're looking to raise some money to actually do that research, which is hard to do in the current climate, given a massive cuts to all these programs and government funding. So you can go to sportinclusionproject.com. And if you're interested in supporting it, we need to raise about 20 or 30 grand, which isn't a huge amount of money, but the lives that can be saved
makes a big difference.
Oh, it's massive. And it's tax deductible as well, which is nice.
Even better.
but even, you know, if anyone has associations with sport organizations, or oftentimes sending a letter to sport organizations can really help. Say, what are you doing about this? Why are you cutting all your diversity officers right now during the cuts? Why are you only keeping your male programs going, your white, heterosexual, cisgender male coaches, but all your pride games have been cut and women's teams. And so even that can really help move things along. It's really challenging what sport is doing, and why is it being allowed to remain this last bastion of homophobia? Like, you know, even the military has cleaned up its act and police forces, yet sport is just sort of allowed to do what it wants to do and harm our children.
Powerful words, the last bastion of homosexuality. Thank you so much for coming on the show and finally injecting some sport into our little show. I appreciated the time you took with us so much, and the work that you're doing, and the research and information you're providing back to the community. It's so important.
Thank you so much for your interest, and thanks for doing the show that you've been doing. It's really important, all the issues that you've raised and profiled and given a voice to so many people. So thank you.
Oh, this old thing. Thank you, Eric.
Thanks.
Boys, I'm literally holding back tears. This brings us to the last episode, the last goodbye of the last episode of our regular show. I want to just say I love all three of you so much. As we've talked about before, I've gotten to know you all so well and to share so much with you, and we've talked about stuff that none of us ever thought we'd be talking about in public. I love the little community we've built, so thank you so much.
Yeah,
one thing that I wanted to ask everyone and do a bit of a quick round table before we go is, what is it that you hope our listeners take from this show? We've spent so much time and energy over the last 2 years putting it together. What do you hope people take from it?
I really hope they take my load.
Oh my God.
You know how emotional I am.
You feel me.
Look, honestly, coming to the end of the show, it feels very natural, actually. It feels like now is the right time to do it. Like I said earlier, when I think back as to, like, if I was to say to anybody listening to the show, like, what has been important to me about this is, through this show, I proved something I didn't believe in myself, which was that boys like me could get opportunities like this. And as a queer person of color, the default in my mind is to not put your hand up. You're the kid that sits at the back of the class so you don't get noticed. And you're the kid that doesn't get cast in things. You're the kid that doesn't apply for things. It literally came down to like the day of applications where I said, no, I have to put my hand up. And it's done so well. And I've heard from so many other queer people of color within the community who tune in every single week because they appreciate hearing someone with a shared lived experience to them. And I would want anyone listening to this show to take away that the next time an opportunity comes your way and your learned experiences tell you not to put your hand up for it because of what's happened in the past or the way that society operates, you know, put both fucking hands up for it. You know, wave and scream and say, I will do it, and I will do it better than anybody else you can find, because your voice is so valuable right now. It's been not heard for far too long. Put yourself forward for all those opportunities that maybe you didn't in the past. I certainly did, and I'd prove to myself what I didn't believe in by doing this.
Kyle?
Oh, gosh. There's so many things. Like, it's been such a journey for me, and like when I look back at like who I was when starting this, it's crazy. Like, if I could talk directly to some of the listeners and what I want them to take away as like from the experience of listening to the show, don't get trapped into the mindset of thinking you are insignificant. Like, don't forget that you matter and that you can contribute to a change, that your voice matters. Everyone has room to grow as a person. So allow yourself to do that and allow others to do that and help them if you're able to. And like, as cliche as it might sound, I guess, be proud. Be proud of who you are. Be proud of your community. Because honestly, I don't think I was. And thank you for sticking with me and letting me grow as a person and becoming proud. And yeah, just for all you guys being there for me and the listeners being so nice and like, the messages I've received, it's really helped me with my confidence. And just remember, like, you don't have to fit into someone's idea of what you should be, and there's no correct way of being gay or queer or trans, bi or lesbian. Just embrace all of it.
Yeah. Wow. Mikey, yours better be funny because the other two had to cry.
Wow, sorry. Oh god.
I guess what I want, well, what I hope that our listeners have taken away from our show is that it is okay to be different and just to be yourself unapologetically, like every single day, be you, be loud and be proud and be kind to yourself and be kind to everybody around you. Whether you are a POC or trans or non-binary person or a queer person, there's always, always going to be space and always space for you, and you are all valid, every single one of you. You're all beautiful, beautiful people, and thank you so much for joining us on this crazy journey that we've all been on together. And I'm just so happy that I've had this experience, and I feel so fortunate, and thank you so much to everybody that supported us. Yeah. And thank you so much to you guys for being on this journey with me, and I can't imagine not doing it now. Like,
yeah,
if you had said to me 2 and a bit years ago that this is what was going to be happening, I would have laughed in your face. But
totally. But
I guess my parting words would be Black Lives Matter, trans lives matter, and always revolt against the powers that be, because the gays are revolting.
Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful words. It won't surprise you that my whole thing that I hope people take from this is sex stuff. but I do, like, I was reflecting on this last episode, and I was like, what am I proud of, and what do I hope I've changed for younger people or even older people that are listening to this that I didn't have in my own life? And as I've talked about, like, my life growing up, knowing that I was gay in an incredibly heterosexual house and an incredibly heterosexual school and that sort of thing, meant that I really hated the feeling, the sexual feelings. It wasn't so much about the lifestyle feelings, but the sexual cravings that I had for other men was something that I despised in myself. And even for my first several years on the gay scene, when I was out and I was fine with the community, I was still sometimes feeling sick about the fact that I was having sex with men. So I hope the way that we've talked about sex on this podcast openly and honestly, and about enjoying it, but also being responsible in how you do it and the people that you do it with, and also being responsible in your sexual health and those sorts of things. These are all things that I found terrifying years ago. So I hope that us talking about that sort of stuff has helped people that might also have grown up in a not so welcoming environment.
Yeah.
And also maybe inspire them to try something a little more saucy.
Saucy? And to douche properly.
Someone be like, I'm going to give that a go. We should probably also thank a few of the people that helped this show happen absolutely. Over the past 2 years, because believe it or not, none of us are capable of doing it. Lisa, not me, but one of my favorites was our mate Derek at Castaway Studios.
Good Derek. Old Derek.
He had a green screen, he had a sound machine, and he had a giant poster of dogs playing poker, and he always got my motor running.
Good girl. The lovely Jordan Lodd as well at Acast for her ongoing support and promotional opportunities. Help us get that bank.
And a big, big thank you to all of our amazing guests that's come on the show and shared your stories and given us all the information, and including regulars like Dr. George. Thank you so much, Dr. George. Yeah. You've been amazing.
Oh, and a huge, huge, big fucking thank you to our patrons. Honestly, you've made our lives like a lot better. You've helped us buy tickets to cities to do shows. And it's really made a big difference. And we really appreciate the support that you've shown us and just giving kind of anything towards this art form that we are doing.
It validated what we were doing.
It really did. And it made a big difference to us, definitely. And so thank you so much for sticking with us.
It also, it goes without saying, but a huge, huge thank you to Koala Mattresses for a great
Oh, that really takes me back. The wine.
I wouldn't have been able to do the show without the support, the particular back support that the mattresses provided, but as well as that, but anyone that has ever given us a review on iTunes, other members of the community, our Facebook group, because we're here talking a big game about how big our dicks are or whatever, but I've learned so much from talking to you guys, the people in our group, and the little Instagram messages that I have with you guys, and you know, I thank you guys for engaging in those dialogues with us rather than just sort of writing us off if you didn't agree with something we said.
So true.
Or if you think we were a little just scratching the surface of a topic. Yeah. Those people are kind of the unsung heroes of these shows, because they provide us with so much insight and lived experience that we can then learn from. So thank you to everyone who's ever shared with us in private or at a bar or in our DMs, you know.
And of course, a huge thank you as well to the person who, without we would not have this podcast, our incredible producer, Dan Gregg, head of Lip Media. He like you, we talked about this in the last Patreon episode. We did an interview with him, but for anyone that's not a Patreon, you know, if you think we put in work into this podcast, he puts in a thousand times
a lot of work.
He's the reason that this podcast exists. He is the one that does the editing. He wrangles us, which is definitely not easy, especially when we're doing a live show in Mardi Gras and we're blind drunk and a little bit high. So a huge thank you to Dan Gregg as well.
The devil works hard, but Dan Gregg works harder.
Of course, we're all going to be having to work on new projects, and I really honestly hope so much that the four of us and Dan can all work on something in the future. In the meantime, something I'm working on, I don't know if I've ever mentioned it to you guys on the podcast before, but I'm part of a comedy group called Granny Bingo.
Never heard of it.
It's look, you know, we do live shows normally, but during COVID we're doing a podcast called Granny Bingo Wireless, and I play my own grandmother. It's basically us attacking Karens, but older Karens, World War II generation Karens. It's just us just pointing out the complete flaws in privileged white culture. And our grands from the Granny Bingo podcast have actually recorded a special message for the final episode of The Gays Revolting. Do you mind if I play it?
Yeah, go for it.
Oh, hello, kiddies. My name is Ms. Edith Vale, and I'm joined by my best friend in the entire world, Maureen McGillicuddy.
G'day, gang. How you doing? I hope everybody's well, and
What is this for, sorry? This is the gays revolting.
They sure are. What the podcast, though?
Yes, well, my grandson's on the podcast.
Is that right?
Yes. We don't... He's a bit of a black sheep in the family. We're not too proud of him. He's on this Gays Revolting podcast, and he was saying it's their last episode. So I thought we could just record a little message and say to them, you know, kiddies, if you're sad that the Gays are Revolting is ending, and you're not sure what podcast you're going to listen to...
Don't listen to ours.
No.
Don't listen. No, we don't want that.
We don't want your kind of people listening to our podcast. It's nothing against you. It's just that we don't like your kind of people.
Yeah. And that's, you know, it's a different time. We're a different generation. We can't do anything about it. You know, I will say it is a podcast that is lasting. It's staying on air. We're still releasing episodes.
Unlike this one. And I think it's because we didn't have Kyle on our podcast.
That made a huge difference.
Of course, if there's any... normal people listening.
I don't think we meant to call. I don't know. We got that letter because we call straight people normal, which they are.
Straight people.
I can't remember.
Is it not PC?
It's not PC anymore.
Well, what am I supposed to say? If you're not if you're not a listen, put it this way. If you voted no in the marriage equality postal vote, then you might want to listen to our podcast.
You'll love it. Birds of a feather.
We do all sorts of fun things. You know, we have a little section called Agony Grins where you can write in with your problems and we'll come up with some solutions for you.
I'm psychic and I do readings so I can tell if you're not wearing a mask.
And sometimes we read through the obituaries in the newspaper just to see what all our old friends are up to.
I will say that is the one, gay bit of our show, because we watched Paul's Drag Race once and we changed the name of the obituary section to Oh, Bitch, You Aries. And all the gays were...
I can speak gay. Did you know that, Maureen?
Can you?
Yes, queen. Slay, hunty.
I've got no idea what you're saying.
Fist me in the peel bathroom, darling.
Oh, terrific.
I don't know what it means, but, you know.
Well, it's been a few years. What about this? Do you want to go to the GH for a drink? Is that
current
gay?
I don't know. I think that's the old language.
Oh, right. Anyway, well, look, you know, if you want to have a listen to us, go for it. But I promise you won't like it. You won't like what you're listening to.
No. All right, kiddies, we'll catch you later. Enjoy the rest of this episode and we'll see you at the next Mardi Gras.
Yes, we'll be the ones at the end of Oxford Street with the protest signs. Looking forward to seeing you.
Hooroo.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm sorry about those women. They're awful.
They're goddamn awful.
Well, one more message for our listeners, I guess, is we are going to leave all of our episodes up online. We are also going to start releasing our post-show content. So obviously it won't be as fresh and relevant, but we just thought it might be nice for people to be able to listen to that.
Yeah.
So this is stuff that we recorded for our after shows over the last couple of years that'll be uploaded weekly, you know, for something to listen to. But I guess one of the important things is a lot of people might start listening to this podcast in the future and therefore be hearing this episode months into the future. And what I'd like to say to them is please jump on Facebook and go to our Facebook group, the Gays Are Revolting closed group in brackets. Because it is a really lovely community and we are going to keep that Facebook group going. And it's a space where people can ask questions or look for advice or, you know, if they're just feeling a bit shit going there for a chat or anything like that, which is one of the things I'm most proud of from doing this podcast. So we're going to keep that Facebook group going and I hope everyone stays part of that and continues to share important information and tips.
And all the people that are so intent that there's been some kind of drama or like that we're ending the podcast. Everyone is like really after that. So
I know.
I just wanted to like set it all clear, and the reason we're ending the show is because Luke, and then you cut it there, and then you're just done. Oh, can you imagine if we just cut on a cliffhanger like that? Drama mama.
Well, I guess for the very last time.
Oh my gosh.
Bye.
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 Oh, I love you all.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.